Well, hello again, New Life Church. Hey, I'm so glad that each and every one of you tune in each week. And I just want to say hello to everybody, whether you are near or far, whether you're home or away. Welcome to church this week. We are starting part three of our series called One Day at a Time. This is a series where we are looking at the historical account of a man named Joseph. Joseph's story is recorded in the book of Genesis. His story is actually the longest story in the book of Genesis. It begins in chapter 37, and it continues all the way to the end of the book of Genesis in chapter 50. And you see, Joseph, he's this guy that when he was 17 years old, God had given him a dream. This dream spoke of Joseph's significance in the future. And but this dream, little did Joseph know that it would take more than 22 years or more from the time he had the dream until he would see that dream fulfilled. And in the middle between the dream and the dream destination, Joseph would experience great, great difficulties, betrayal, being lied upon, and lots of hurt. And so the challenge is that Joseph gives us is this incredible example of what it means to be loyal to God despite what happens in your life, and to cling to what you know God has made to be your purpose in life, and that God gives all of us dreams, and we are all on this journey to get to the dream destination. And it takes going one day at a time. Let's take a real quick recap of where we've been on this journey. In part one, we looked at Joseph's family. We looked at where he came from. And we realized, man, did he come from such a dysfunctional family. And that there are some general influencers to what helps shape families. And these influencers are influences from the past, influences from the present, the impact of decisions, and the impact of the different family stages. And of course, this is the big takeaway I want you to have that week, is that the history of your family, it does not have to be the story of your future. And that's certainly the case for Joseph. And then in part two, last week we said you have to handle the dream. Joseph, he got this dream from God. I know he was excited, but he was young. He was 17, and he kind of carried himself with a little bit of pride and kind of boasted about himself a little bit about this dream he had. And so, but here's what we said, that if you want to know God's dream for your life, then you have to first get to know God. And I want to tell you, everybody, every single one of you, God has a dream for your life. If you want to know it, then you got to know God. If you can't be humble with the dream, this is where Joseph got himself in trouble, then you can't handle your destiny. And maybe the journey that Joseph went on for 22 years was to prepare him in character and integrity to handle the destination when he got there. And if pride is in your heart, then guess what? We know insecurity is in the soul, because insecurity is the root of pride. And so we don't want to deal with fruit, we want to dig up the root of pride. And so today, part three, here's my title. It is Pits, Palaces, and Prisons. When we left off with Joseph, we're going to pick back up where we left off. And in today, as we continue his story, Joseph is going to go through some serious ups and downs and twists and turns of being betrayed, being thrown into a pit, and then rising again and being in a palace, and then ending up in prison. And in each three of these locations, I think Joseph has something for us that we can know, something that we can kind of apply to our lives so that we can continue the journey to get to the dream destination. Because God has a dream for your life, and he wants to get you there. But the journey is preparing us inside in our character to handle the dream when we get there. And every one of these stages, I think, was an important part of Joseph's journey so that he could handle the destination one day. So let's pick up right where we left off last week. Genesis chapter 37, verse 12. It says, "Now his brothers had gone to graze his father's flock near Shechem. And Israel," this is the father of Joseph, and all of his 11 brothers. And so Israel said to Joseph, as you know, your brothers are grazing their flocks near Shechem. Come, I am going to send you to them. And very well, Joseph replied. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. But they saw him in the distance, these guys. They saw him in the distance, and before he reached them, before Joseph got to them, they had already made a decision, and they plotted to kill this youngest brother. Here comes that dreamer, they said to each other. Come now, let's kill him, and let's throw him into one of these cisterns, and say that a ferocious animal devoured him, and then we'll see what comes of this dreamer. Wow. So these brothers, again, they hated this little brother named Joseph. They couldn't stand this kid. He was favored by their father. He had a special coat that his dad gave him because he was his favorite. And we know this because he was the firstborn son of Jacob's favorite wife, Rachel, and all of these great implications, all the drama of the family we've talked about over the past few weeks. But here he comes again. And this time the father's not around. No one's there to see what's about to go down. And the brothers decide, this is our moment. Let's kill this kid once and for all, and we'll throw him into a cistern. A cistern are these big pits, and they would be filled with water. But luckily for Joseph on this day, Reuben came to the rescue. Now, Reuben is the oldest of all these 12 brothers. And so being the oldest of the 12 brothers has implications for him as far as his order in the family. That being that he was the firstborn son in the family meant that he also had to take on the position of being the judge for the family and also the one that would be judged for the family. So he knew that if his brothers did in fact kill Joseph and throw him in the pit, that he ultimately would be the one that would be judged for his death. So obviously Reuben doesn't want Joseph's blood on his hands. So he says, whoa, 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 time out. We are not killing anybody today. And he tells all of his brothers, hey, listen, fine. You want to throw him in the pit? You can throw him in the pit, but you cannot kill him. And so they throw him in the pit, and Reuben, I don't know where he goes. He runs off. And then while the brothers are sitting around eating their lunch as they're watching the sheep, you know, Judah, one of the brothers, he comes up with this great idea. He's like, what gain do we get from just like letting Joseph die? And then they see merchants coming, traveling by. And Judah comes up with this great idea. Let's sell him. Let's sell the kid for 20 pieces of silver, and then we get a little something for this. And so as the merchants came by, they sell their brother Joseph to the merchants as a slave for 20 pieces of silver. And then after he is gone, Reuben returns to the scene and he looks down in the pit and he starts saying, where's the boy? Where's the boy? Where's Joseph? And when he finds out what his brothers did, he realizes, how am I supposed to go back to our father? Because all along, Reuben's plan was, when they're all gone and we've left Joseph in the pit, Reuben wanted to go back and rescue Joseph out of the pit, take Joseph back to his father so his blood wouldn't be on his hands, because he was the firstborn son and he had a little bit more responsibility in this situation. But now Joseph's completely missing, and Reuben realizes, how can I even show myself to my father again? And so they come up with this really crooked plan. They had kept Joseph's coat. Remember the special coat that his father Jacob had given him? And they tear the coat up, and then they cover it in goat's blood, and they bring it back to their father Jacob, and they say, we can't find Joseph, but can you verify that this belongs to your son? And of course, Jacob looks at it, and he says, my son has certainly been devoured by a ferocious beast, and he is gone. And all of his children come to try to comfort him, but he can't be comforted. And look, in Genesis 37, 35, all of his sons and daughters came to comfort him, comfort Jacob, at the thought of the loss of his favorite son, Joseph. But he refused to be comforted. He said, no, I will continue to mourn until I join my son in the grave. So his father wept for Joseph. And think about how just deceitful this is. that he is standing there in the presence of all his sons and daughters. So his 11 other sons all know what really happened, but they're willing to watch their father weep and mourn over the loss of their son, but they all know what really took place, that they took Joseph, they threw him in a pit, and they sold him into slavery for 20 pieces of silver, the silver that's probably still in their pockets when they're trying to comfort their dad over the deception and the lie that they caused. This is kind of jacked up. So here was Joseph. He found himself in a pit after having a dream. A dream that God spoke to him about his significance. But what happens when you go from a dream to deep in a pit? What does that do for you? I think what Joseph would say about pits is this, is that pits is where your current circumstances are inconsistent with your dreams. And if you feel like you've got a dream from God and God has birthed a purpose in your life, and then but you have found your life currently in the pits, I would tell you that what that is is that your current circumstances are inconsistent with the dream that God has given you. And now you currently are left with two choices. When life is in the pits, you have two choices. Choice number one is this, is that you can go ahead and reduce your life to your present circumstances. In other words, you can say, you can give up on the dream, you can quit on the dream, and you can just decide, I will live in the pits. I will live in the pits. Maybe the dream wasn't from God. So you can do that. You can reduce your life to your present circumstances, or you could never allow your current circumstances to change the dream that God put in your heart. So regardless of whether life is in the pits right now, you can still cling to the fact that God gave you the dream and you can believe the dream. Psalm 37:4 says this, take delight in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. You see, before we saw Joseph, he had this dream. He was kind of prideful about the dream. He was really loud about his dream. He upset his family with his dream to the point that it got him into the pit. And now I wonder if the pit is the process to prepare Joseph for prosperity that he will find in the future. So let's look again through the story. And now we're in Genesis 39, verse 1. And so Joseph, he was sold by his brother to these merchants. The merchants have gone to Egypt. So now Joseph, he had been taken down to Egypt. And Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. So he was taken by the merchants down to Egypt and then sold into Potiphar's house. Potiphar was a big figure. He was an official to the king of Egypt at the time. So like he was a big deal. He would live in a palace. And so the Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered. Listen, it doesn't matter if you're in the pits, but if the Lord is on your side, you will prosper. And we see time and time again that the dream is still alive in Jacob because the Lord is still with him. That the dream and God being with him is not specific to a location, but it's really about the condition of Joseph's heart, that Joseph clings to the Lord. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered. And he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. So now we see Joseph. He's not in the pits anymore, baby. He's in the palace, isn't he? And when his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care every single thing he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. So Potiphar realized, man, whatever I give this kid, it turns to gold. There is something special about this kid, so I'm going to let him be in charge of everything and watch my whole household be blessed. So the blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care with Joseph in charge. He did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. How awesome is that? That he recognizes God's favor in his life, and that the more he puts him in charge of, the more he gets blessed. Well, what happens next is that now Joseph, watch this, he was well-built. He was handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph. And she says, come to bed with me. But look at this. He refused. He refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you're his wife. I mean, that kind of makes sense. You're his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against, not sin against his master, but to sin against God? How could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, well, day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or to even be with her. This tells you something about this type of deception, this type of temptation. Even if it crawls after you day after day, you refuse day after day, and then you set up barriers around your life to not even be with her. And one day he went into the house to attend to his duties like he did every day, but this time none of the household servants were inside. He's getting set up here. She caught him by his cloak and said, come to bed with me. And he left his cloak in her hand because he straight up ran out of that coat. And he ran out of the house. This is an incredible lesson when you are facing temptation or when temptation is clawing after you. You ready? It's this. Run! You have to run. And so he runs out of the house so much so he runs right out of his coat. And when she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants and said, look, she said to them, this Hebrew has been brought to us to make a sport of us. But he came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. Yes, I did. I screamed. And when he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and he ran out of the house. Uh-oh. You see, this is what deception does. When deception doesn't get its way, it then manipulates the situation and leverages your no. It leverages your strength in order to try to attack you and manipulate others against you. And now no one can deny this story. But she simply had to just be manipulative to now attack Joseph when she didn't get what she wanted. So now, although Joseph has left the pit, he has now found himself in the palace. Potiphar shows up. And guess what? When Potiphar shows up in the house, the wife was waiting for him. She still got Joseph's cloak, and she tells Potiphar about what she found. So I think Joseph has something to say to us about what it is to be in the palace. And so the palace is simply the part of the journey that demands integrity. You see, he got out of the pits. That his current circumstance did not line up with God's dream, but he stayed faithful to God. Now he's in the palace, but what the palace is teaching Joseph is that this journey will demand integrity. It demands integrity. And so two things here is that, one, I think Joseph would tell you that what people believe about you is not as important as your personal behavior. Because he did not care that day after day, this woman wanted him to go to bed with her. He did not care. He didn't care the day he ran out of the house. He didn't care even though she lied and ultimately got him into deeper trouble for something that he was falsely then accused of. He didn't care because all he cared about was one thing. I will not sin against God. And so what people thought about him, what he knew people would say about him, what people would gossip about him, it didn't matter more than ensuring that his integrity was in place and his behaviors honored God. And secondly, I think Joseph gives us this incredible example that we do not serve man. We serve God. And the reason why Potiphar's house was so blessed was because Joseph wasn't serving Potiphar. Joseph was serving God. The reason why Joseph could have integrity even when he could have had taken the offer from Potiphar's wife because nobody was looking, nobody was around. No. For Joseph, he wasn't serving man. He wasn't trying to please man. He's only serving, and he is out to please God because he knew God was the giver of the dream. And this is a part of his journey to reach the dream. So your choices, they may not be popular, but if they honor God, then you can be like Joseph. You can be at peace with whatever the fallout may be. Proverbs 28:6, it says this, it says, better is a poor man who walks in his integrity than a rich man who was crooked in his ways. This is Joseph. Joseph chose that it is better. It's better to reap the consequences of this world. It's better to be talked about. It's better to be lied about. It's better to be walked over than to ever lose my integrity. Better is a poor man who walks in integrity than a rich man who is crooked in his ways. And so when Potiphar showed up that day and his wife still had Joseph's cloak in her hand and she tells him everything that happened, of course, Potiphar was absolutely angry about Joseph. And so he has Joseph thrown then into the king's prison. And so we pick up in back in Genesis 39, but while Joseph was there in prison, watch this, the Lord was with him. So Joseph has gone from the pits, he's been in the palace, now he finds himself in a prison. Yet, in the pit, in the palace, and now in the prison, the Lord is still with Joseph. In the Lord, he showed kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden, watch this, he puts Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison. And he was made responsible for all that was done there. They see God's favor. They see the leadership in Joseph. And the warden paid not attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Listen, you can go to whatever job you have, and if you do it as unto the Lord, you'll be blessed. You're not serving man, you're not serving a company. You are serving God. And it didn't matter if Joseph was in the pit, if he was in the palace, or if he's in the prison. He's going to serve God in the same manner that he would serve God on a Sunday morning in the rows of his church. He's going to serve God as if he's staring him in the eye, or if he doesn't seem to be present. He's going to serve God. He's going to keep his integrity. He's going to practice living the dream he saw at 17 until the dream became a reality. But this is, I think, what Joseph would teach us about prisons, is that prisons is about helping others dream come true while you're still waiting on yours. You see, when he ended up in that prison, a couple of the king's men ended up in the same exact prison, the cupbearer and the baker. If you know the story, you know that they offended the king somehow and they got thrown into the same prison as Joseph. Well, one day they were really disturbed, and Joseph said, guys, what's going on? What's wrong with you? And they said, well, we both had dreams last night, and we just were disturbed by them. So Joseph says, well, the interpretation only belongs to God, so tell me your dream. They tell him the dreams, and Joseph gives them an accurate interpretation of the dream. And for the one that his outcome was positive, that he would be restored to the position of cupbearer to the king, Joseph said just one thing: remember me. In 3 days, you're going to get out. Remember me. And it came true. The cupbearer got out, was restored to his position, and he remembered Joseph not. So sometimes in the prison is where you're helping others' dream come true, even though you're still waiting for yours to come true. Wow. So you have a couple choices about the prison. Number one, instead of becoming bitter, because you probably have a right to be. Joseph has a right to become bitter. He's been lied on. He's been betrayed. He's been sold as property. He's worked as a slave. And now he's in prison. He's got every right to be bitter. But instead of becoming bitter, I think Joseph would tell you, you need to commit to continue to make others better. Because he serves the Lord. And two, this is a mark of mature character. I just wonder that because he's willing to make others' dreams come true, even though he's still waiting on his, even though he's been betrayed, I wonder if there is something going on inside of him where his character is continuing to mature and become strong to handle the dream destination that is soon to come. Look at Ephesians chapter 6, verse 7 and 8. It says, serve wholeheartedly as if you were serving the Lord, not people, not circumstances. That you're going to serve wholeheartedly, not because you get paid well or not because every situation is right around you, but no, because you're serving as unto the Lord, not people, because you know that the Lord will reward each of you for whatever good they do, whether they are slave or free. So listen, I think that Joseph, he's going from pits to palaces to prisons, and his journey has been full of betrayal and jealousy and temptation and lies and being in locked up and set free and ups and downs, twists and turns. Here's what I think that he would tell you, and this is my last thought for you this morning, is that maybe you're not supposed to follow your dreams. Follow God, and maybe your dreams will follow you. I think the dream he had at 17 when he was at home with his father and he had a fancy coat, the same dream went with him in the pit. And it was the same dream that gave him hope that when he was sold as a slave and then he ended up in a palace, that the dream was still alive in him. But because the dream just followed him to the pit, the dream follows him to the palace, the dream follows him to a prison. Because if he was chasing a dream, he would have quit. But he wasn't chasing a dream. He was chasing the God of the dream. And because God was his pursuit, God was with him. And the dream is still alive and it's still coming. It's still coming. He's still journeying to the dream destination. And God is about to break through. And now Joseph, he's about to see this great blessing in his life that leads to freedom for so many other people. We'll have to unpack that in later weeks. Let me pray for you this morning. God, I pray for those today. God, I pray that you would keep the dream alive in them, Lord Jesus, that we would stop chasing dreams and we will start following you. And then the dreams will eventually catch up to us and we will enter the dream destination, your call and purpose you have for our lives in Jesus' mighty, mighty name. I pray. Amen.
Hey, New Life Church, thank you so much for joining us today. If this is your first time joining us and you'd like to learn a little bit more about New Life Church, you can text the word CONNECT to the number 765-347-9127. If you're a regular New Lifer and you'd like to continue your worship through giving, there are three different ways you can give. You can give on our website, newlifeforkokomo.org. You can mail your giving to the church. The address is 1803 East Vail Avenue, Kokomo, Indiana, 46901. Or you can text New Life for Kokomo to the number 77977. Again, thank you so much for joining us, and we hope to see you guys next time.